So I'm a school nurse in Chicago. My name is Saria Laughlin, and I conducted this photo voice project with the Paul Ambrose Fellowship Award, and it gave me a small stipend to be able to conduct this with students in Chicago. So I wanted to start first with what we know the problem already is. Our kids are overweight, obesity is a problem. 2 to 19 years old, we have 32% and 17% obese. And in African Americans, we have 2 to 19 years, 24% obese, 39% overweight, and that 6 to 11 range, it's almost 30% and 43% overweight. So what we found is that the trajectory of how obesity has occurred over time. In 1976, only 8.2% of Black Americans' children were obese. And then in 2007-2008, 22.4% of Black American children were obese. And I did this study in a neighborhood called East Garfield Park in Chicago. So these are some of the numbers in some selected neighborhoods in Chicago. North Lawndale is a predominantly African American neighborhood, as well as Roseland, and the obesity rate, and that's over the 95th percentile in Roseland, is 56.4% and 46.4% in North Lawndale. So I started out with doing a review of the literature, and what I found out is that there was not a lot of research done in primarily African American communities, and that long-term follow-up assessments were not regularly done. Many resources were utilized to create interventions that demonstrated little success, so there were inconsistent results. But then when we really look back to see what was going on, how student input was put into the interventions was not really clear, and it wasn't described in the findings. So I found that a couple of the studies did have weight and BMI decrease, but that was a multi-level intervention. So I want to look at using community-based participatory research in order to address this issue of how we get student input into how research is done, and that's how I got to Photo Voice. So we start with the development of the program, pre-assessment, you have student community research, development intervention, development of the intervention research, and then the stakeholders, the community, how we translate that intervention into the community. So it doesn't just stay where it was, and it really goes out. So giving children a voice, involving them in the process from the very beginning of research is needed. So when I was looking at methodology to examine some of the things that I wanted to look at, I wanted to see, are there neighborhood community factors, those environmental factors that would impact childhood obesity? And then what do children perceive as healthy foods? I even wanted to go as basic as that, because what I think and what they think are totally different, as we'll see. So the methodology that gives voice to children to create an intervention that can have a strong impact. So we wanted something that was for children, by children. It led us to Photo Voice. So this was developed by Carolyn Wayne. It's a qualitative visual methodology, grassroots. It's from the perspective of the community, and just giving them opportunity to have their voice heard and based in community-based participatory research. So Freer, critical education, was the underpinning along with the feminist theory and community-based approach. Joe Spence was a community photographer, and that's how this came about, along with the power struggle, giving power to those who have a voice and allowing them to participate in the decisions. So why we choose it is used as a resource versus used as a problem. And that's something, even as we're seeing in Chicago, with increasing violence, okay, it's looking like that's the problem, but how do we switch it around to make them be empowered so that they can be the resource. And something that was developmentally appropriate because they can visually express themselves easier sometimes than talking, just sitting and talking about it. So the question asked was what they perceive as being healthy or non-healthy and what influences those choices. So we looked at eating habits and the environmental influences such as neighborhood peers, family, school, culture. Again, it was in East Garfield Park with a youth activities director, and these children between the ages of 9 and 14 years old residing in East Garfield Park. So this was the flyer that I used to recruit at the community center that I worked with, and all the kids got a $10 gift card to Subway, and they were just asked to take photos of what they eat. And this is just a timeline. We started with recruitment, taking the photos, developing the themes, and then analyzing the data. So the first week was talking to the kids, how to use the camera, consent and innocent. They were trained on the digital and the disposable. And they were given a week to take photos. So 9 students were invited, 7 agreed to participate. They took photos individually, and I was there every day because with youth, it's the need to constantly encourage them to follow through. So, and there were times when like the cameras wouldn't work, and so we needed additional cameras to be distributed. And also recruited 2 additional students into the study. Third week, they had the cameras returned, the pictures were developed, and it was facilitated with the softball coach that had this group, and we had 4 participants, even though we had about 7 signed up, and again, working with the youth and getting them engaged throughout the whole process is a challenge. We discussed it in amended methods, which I'll describe on the next slide. But they identified major themes towards the end and told us, they told stories around some of the photos that they had. So roundtable discussion, we used the poster board to put the photos on for each student and went to each student and said, okay, what do you think is healthy? What do you think is not healthy? So we had 51 photos on all, but 14 were discussed because some of the students weren't there even though their photos were returned. So the typical method is, what do you see? What is really happening? How does it relate to our lives? Why does this problem or strength exist? What can we do about it? With young kids, they kind of gave me blank stares. So, I had to use more direct questioning. What is this? What's going on at this time? Did you eat by yourself? Did you eat with your family? How did you get your food? Was it healthy? Is the food unhealthy? It had to be very direct for them to engage me and each other. They started to talk. So, what they thought was healthy, it was interesting. Cheese sticks, they were baked, so they thought it was healthy. Chili, Pringles, strawberry milk. Popcorn, Fruity Pebbles, Cheerios, and chocolate ice cream from Whole Foods. And chicken nuggets. Not healthy Cheetos, Reese's Pieces, and fried foods. So these are some examples of their healthy foods. And these are the cheese sticks, chicken nuggets, Cheerios. That's the chili and the Pringles with the strawberry milk. And the Cheetos, it was really interesting because the girl who bought the Cheetos, she gets up, it's a 2-for-5 bag, and she gets them every other day and eats the whole thing. So, and that's the Reese's Pieces, it's hard to tell, and that's fried chicken. So some of the issues were just working with a facilitator that was not as familiar with the process, but she knew the kid. So it was how to balance that was new. Camera issues. Parents making choices of foods to bring to the house based on the premise of the project. They changed their shopping patterns. So, oh, we're gonna eat tilapia and broccoli, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna take a picture of what you eat normally all the time. And intensive follow-up. And some students didn't want to take pictures in restaurants because they were uncomfortable. They was like, oh, that's weird to take pictures in a restaurant. So only wanted to take pictures of what the parent made instead of what was eaten. And directed questions led to the most results. So environmental influences, what was eating, what was available in the home, eating out of habit, like when I asked about the fruity pebbles, had some yesterday and the day before that, so it's just typical of what they would have. Household dynamics, eating separately in the same household at different times, and ability to use the oven and stove top. So they were asked to eat together, and one of the girls says they eat at different times, they'd be thirsty, which means they had to be in a hurry to get to the food. So they would eat before the boys would eat before others. And cost effectiveness of food outlets. Their perceptions of healthy and non-healthy foods are shaped by foods typical. And like someone said, you know, it's like this camaraderie. Oh, you put nacho cheese on it. Oh, I was going to do that. So that's how, like, something they could bond on. Foods that were not mainstream or well known were seen as restaurant foods. We had this big debate over crinkle fries, and that was only in the restaurant. You couldn't cook it at home. It was interesting. And that the foods from health stores were all seen as healthy. It was healthy. It was from Whole Foods. And so this is audio transcribed with two tape recorders and notes, complete transcription reviewed twice for accuracy, coded based on what the children said and the themes identified, neighborhood, family, peer, and access, and the food seen as healthy and unhealthy. And the idea of healthy foods directed by food groups, like they'll say, oh, it's cheese, you know, that's in the food group, preparation, processing, baked versus fried. And those chips that you saw, those would come from the corner store on the way to school, and typically ate in what was in the house and ate alone. So the recommendation is like further exploring, utilizing this as a tool to examine youth knowledge and how you adapt that to meet the needs of middle school age children, and accounting for developmental maturity and maximizing the usefulness of this methodology. And going forward, one of the kids talked about, when I asked her about where the food for less was, use your phone. They always had their phone with them all throughout the whole project. So how did the use of digital technology was something to think about, and would they be more apt to discuss these healthy habits in a text messaging group setting in addition to focus group? And does the use of cell phones to take pictures yield more data versus photographs taken with disposable cameras? So just gathering information that could be effective and useful and involve them. And that's the end.
So we have time for questions. Actually, why don't I have all the speakers come up and sit here so that, because you'll have to probably use the mic or at least be.
Can I just, I have these, they can take one there, if you like, they're for the environmentalist group, so it's just a little sticky. And we have, for the website, and we have a list of 2 weeks we send out information.
Chairs,
so
if you
want to get on that list, just put your name in your email.
Okay, any questions for the speakers?
Checking that there. Go ahead. Yeah, have they started including any environmental content?
Including environmental content in the next exam.
Right. The education work group has been in communication with the NCLEX folks right now, and so we've got 2 people that are signed up as question writers. I think that's what they're called. So stay tuned. We're working our way back.
And can you hear answers, or do they need to use the mic? I'm just trying to get a sense. Can you hear? Okay, go ahead.
I just would like to commend you for doing this, because across Minnesota, in the small health departments, the public health nuisance abatement work, according to statute, is done by public health nursing staff. And hasn't been a lot out there to train nurses in terms of what to look for. And this is just an excellent to bring into the curriculum for nursing staff, and would encourage you to do this for continuing ed for nursing staff that are currently practicing and haven't had a chance to.
Sure, go, please.
Yeah, so if you go to the environment website, you'll see that there are already a bunch of CE that are available for free. They're PowerPoint with VoiceOver, CE optional for many of those. And if there are specific kinds of programming that you want, that website is an interactive website. So you can ask, and we could build, or we could co-build with you. So there's some already there, and there could be lots more.
I was just struck by, I think, just adapting some of your curriculum. If you had a staff meeting, you'd do the same thing. Pick two of your products you're on today and look them up. I mean, just a way to get engaged people to think about
it. Part of my job is state agency liaison, and they also build capacity for the people who are staffing the Department of Health. And part of that involved with the competency and preparation for accreditation. I'm very much involved in providing workshops and what we call lunch and learns, so that the staff can bring their lunch with them, and we have a little mini puppet thing that we do. So we're even trying to build capacity across, kind of break down some of those silos, because a lot of times some people will work maybe in infectious disease or epidemiology, and they won't necessarily understand some of the other environmental, particularly vis-a-vis chemicals. And being able to bring that across from government to academia to the community is very, very valuable.
In the southeastern Wisconsin area, the person who's the public health nurse consultant is also my doctoral student, and we've been able to partner a lot in terms of being able to offer environmental health and environmental public health to the nursing, including epidemiology and how you incorporate that into practice. So we need to do more.
Right. But, for the occupational health nurse, I do have some incorporated into mine, and I found it much easier to connect with the people who do the water and the sewer and are, but I have not been able to connect with the occupational health nurses in our area.
State. I was going to say with state.
Minnesota.
All you have to do is look up on the AAOHN webpage and get the state association.
Yeah, I found the state association. I've actually sent them emails and got nothing back. That's been my real frustration.
I would recommend a couple things. One is to just literally a cold call to the occupational health nurse at any large, like, company. And I'm just picking on that because it's at chemical, and I don't know anything about the occupational health nurse there, but actually sometimes cold call work. I've actually had nurses call me to offer those site walkthroughs, which is great, but I've had cold calls as well. Sometimes with some recommendations on the part of people who know what's going on in those particular instances, and it's not necessarily the best example of having put programs in place, but rather the best learning
example. Yeah, and it isn't that I wanted anything real long, because what we do is we have to go out and interview the person and try and figure out how public health nurse would coordinate with them, and then they kind of research articles related to the area. So
if they went into the AAOHN webpage and looked underneath for the state thing, there's usually listed the president, the chapter president, or state or regional. And if you just contacted that person or found out when their next meeting was and showed up at the meeting with business cards and a flyer or whatever, you'd be surprised at how much you can really start to make some contact there. But we actually did a program for them. Being a member, it was a hell of a lot easier for me to be able to do that. However, what it was the carrot stick kind of thing where we said, well, we'll fill out all that paperwork to give you one contact hour of continuing education. and we're not going to charge you anything for it. And the association paid, I think it was like $50 or something, to be able to award that particular one contact hour. So they paid for that, but then advertised it as free. And it really, we had a pretty good copy. It was 26 people for a little state like Rhode Island. I thought that was doing quite well. So, yeah, it's a matter of trying to make that contact and going from there.
And I'd be persistent.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't work out with one workplace, try another and try another.
I have a question for you and then another question. So is Minnesota a state-planned occupational safety and health? Do you have a state OSHA in Minnesota?
Yes.
So that would be another place to give a buzz, because I'm imagining they have an occupational health nurse somewhere in the state OSHA, and that might be another person to chat up.
We also do, on the state level in the public health department, they have programs, the OSHA consultation program that OSHA subcontracts to the State Department of Health, and then those people go out into industry or whomever for employers. And there's also a full-time position working on a grant, which is strictly bringing wellness programs to industry. So those people, even though they're not doing occupational health, they're doing wellness in an occupational health setting, and we've been able to get a hold of those people. The other people that you might do is the freestanding occupational health clinics that handle most of the workers' compensation. Go to your local clinic and work that way, too, because we have a couple of students that have worked in the freestanding clinics.
And so the answer to that, those consultations usually involve going back into the workplace and to have, even if it's just one student who gets the experience, to go on the worksite walkthrough as they do their consultation, come back and then tell the other students about it. That's fabulous experience.
And I'm wondering if this, most students don't end up in occupational health. Do you find that that the students who have completed any environmental content, when they go back into the hospital in their clinical, I'm assuming this happens what, in their junior year, in their senior year, do they have enlightenment? You know, in talking with their clientele in the hospital, where they work and what they do for a living and all those things that impact their health?
So, I'm going to stand up so I can see you, since there's a head in the way. So our students are now creating brand new roles in hospitals. So Denise Chouinier is now the Director of Sustainability at the University of Maryland Medical Center. Charlotte Wallace is the Coordinator for Sustainability at Anne Arundel Medical Center. These are large, 650 and 300 bed facilities. They are developing green teams. Some of them are staying in the area of practice, nursing practice, but then developing other activities within the hospitals that are recognized, that they're given time release for, and in some instances become paid positions. Now this is new. These are new leadership positions. But I think if we hadn't taught them about environmental health and about, you know, environmental risks in their hospitals, it wouldn't have evolved. So for instance, when Denise Fornier was learning about heavy metals, and she was a telemetry nurse, and you know, they used the Halter monitors, and they put brand new batteries every time, and they used to just toss them. They would just toss them. And so, and many, many, many hospitals still do. And so she, after she learned about lithium and mercury and cadmium, which are all these little things, she just like couldn't toss it anymore. Like, no, I can't do that. So in the telemetry unit, she created a recycling program, and I said, well, that's just terrific, Denise. How many small batteries does the University of Maryland Medical Center buy? And she said, I don't know. And I said, we'll go find out. So she's my student, I can tell her to do that. 97,000 small batteries a year. So she went on to create a small battery recycling program for the whole hospital, and it was work like that. You know, doing an assessment, getting effects, working with vendors, doing all this, very can-do, that made a difference. And then the other difference is that she made with cost savings for the hospital, which is why they eventually said, we need great positions for her. She's like, this is dynamite. And we're seeing that over and over again. So, I mean, I'm very hopeful about what nurses are doing this in the hospital setting.
There's also, we have a group that we work with, Hospitals for a Healthy Environment in Rhode Island. And it's a group of not just nurses, but other paraprofessionals, healthcare professionals. And we talk about the green teams and the sustainability efforts that are going on in the industry. But you know, what really started that group were a bunch of NICU nurses whom we educated about phthalates and all of the IV tubing and all of the things that were going into these little newborns, and particularly the pre-trains, the preemies. And they finally strong-armed the purchasing department into getting rid of the phthalate equipment or devices. And so I think there's pieces and it's a ripple. I know right now, too, that we're working very closely with the Rhode Island State Nurses Association. We have an environmental health committee, and we've given conferences on environmental health topics for nurses, and again, offering the contact hours, and being able to work in the schools as well as with the developmentally disabled. And now, because I do community health, I also have students out in hospice and home care, and we're addressing pharmaceutical waste and some of the issues that happen within the homes with pharmaceutical waste, particularly after a particular patient has passed on or something, they have this polypharmacy, and what do you do with it? So it's gotten a ripple effect of not only the environment within the nursing community, but also gotten back into the actual people that they care for.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry, can you take your presentation? I was wondering, what happened? Do you have a chance to share the findings to the school principal or
that should be coming soon. It should be coming soon that the students, I told them that I want them to be able to know about the presentation as well as the director of the community organization. The softball coach, she left and went to Las Vegas, so she won't be able to go, but at least the kids and the director should be able to attend.
Going to share those photos with the other kids in the school and discuss what's healthy and not healthy. And I wonder if the kids were surprised, for instance, why they thought they're healthy and not healthy.
Well, we didn't really talk about like what was healthy in terms of the correct way. Mm-hmm. It was more just exploratory, so I didn't want to judge them. Okay. And so I just wanted them to just be free to.
Will there be a
follow-up
nutrition education? Do you see that as part of the program
in
the future,
the follow-up nutrition
education in regards to
that? Yeah, there is that program. That's what I'm hoping, that it would be something where their input would tailor something that they would be interested in enough to follow through on in mm-hmm. terms of behavior. So that is the future down the line. So we'll hope to go for that. They would, but in yes, but in CPS, it's very interesting. They have created another department that doesn't involve, and even with environmental, there's an environmental department that doesn't involve nursing. And there's a health and wellness department that does not involve nursing. So,
from Columbia University that we've used with the Latino community in Milwaukee in one of their charter schools. And it might be something you'd be interested in doing. And it's called C3. So if you Google C3, you have it. Okay. It's actually a very nice that you've done curriculum, and it can work.
We also have the EPA Tools for Schools program is a lot based on the community-based participatory research method. Also, one of my nursing students actually took on violence in schools and interviewed a couple of students and asked them what they considered to be violent or violence and violent behavior, and they said anything to do with a gun. So they didn't acknowledge anything with any other weapons or fists or bullying or anything that was not considered violence. So there's some great value in actually listening to the students to find out what their frame of reference is before you can do anything else. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Go ahead.
I'm not sure, Jean, on your one of your first slides, did you have civil action?
Yes. Well, we went to Bulgarin as part of a 2.5-day workshop that we did.
I ask my students to either watch that or Aaron Brockovich. Now, Aaron Brockovich subject matter happened in our county. And again, to the first speaker, it's all about me. The students not only have, and you know that's an old thing, and this stuff happened back in the 50s, but they're looking at it now. One of the students came in with a clipping from the newspaper just within the last couple of weeks. The PG&E has now purchased property again and a home because the plume is moving. And so they, you know, some residents decided to stay, and PG&E will continue to supply them with bottled water. Some residents decided to stay if PG&E would dig them a new well, which they will do, and some residents decided to just move because the plume is moving. So it's all about me, even, you know, not that personal, but because it happened in our county, they're interested now in what's happening with that situation as it's ongoing.
I also, because when I teach, if I teach the public health nursing course, the regular size is 1,200 students. So obviously we can't do a worksite walkthrough or a community walkthrough, but what we do is I show Song of the Canary, which is unavailable for purchase, an older video about dichlorpropane San Joaquin Valley. And they explained that quite well, actually, even though it's geographically distant. And then you talk about the other places that are familiar with them and so forth. So trying to bring it home so that it means something to them.
We have, there are a bunch of films. Sandy Steinberger, who's written three wonderful books that the students in environmental health choose one of those to read, is a wonderful, beautiful writer, and she's a biologist, she's a cancer survivor, and she's a wonderful environmental scientist. But they wrote a book called Living Downstream, and they did a documentary movie about her called Living Downstream. That is very accessible to nursing students, and that's another movie I would suggest.
With the Superfund research program, working with that group, I do community engagement as part of that, and we work with non-governmental organizations that have more or less adopted certain Superfund sites and are very active within those residences and those neighborhoods that are impacted by the Superfund sites. And having them present on what their issues are and what they've done to understand and have a voice in the Superfund process as they go through remediation options, et cetera, is a nice classroom out of it. It's not being out of the Superfund site per se, but hearing the impact of the residents and these community groups and how they've actually found a voice in that whole environmental justice issue. And I do have an interesting comment to add. When I was a master's student at Harvard in the early 80s, I actually visited Riley Leather when it was in operation and before Beatrice Foods purchased that plant. And I saw the marsh grass, all different colors, depending on what animal-based dyes that they used that day. And the marsh grass was purple and orange and red or whatever the heck they were doing to work with the dyes. And I looked at, and we actually went through the plant and did a walkthrough because that was part of our education, was to do health hazards of manufacturing processes. And we went every week, we went someplace different, and that happened to be one of them. So having seen that and had that document, when the civil suit was brought by the Bedford parents of the children who were affected, they actually got our walkthrough assessment reports. And because that was our assignment, we did a walkthrough and then we did a health assessment. And we did a multidisciplinary too because we were all different professions at the time. And they were able to say, this is what was going on, this is what was observed by healthcare professionals. Here's what was going on, and in fact, one of our professors even was very much engaged with the plaintiffs. So it was
rather interesting to see it then come around on that civil action with the book, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I actually remember when it was an operation. I know what all hold that was.
And since you're the professor at UIC that I had, one was gave testimony for the plaintiff and one for the defendant.
One of my colleagues was an industrial hygienist, and I were invited. We didn't realize what was going on with that particular company at the time because it was still kind of under the radar screen. And they had 90 plants around the country, and they invited us in to teach their facilities managers how to do risk communication. We had no idea that there was this huge bugaboo that was about to, you know, the hit the fan. And so we went in and we did these 3-day workshops on risk communication for facilities managers to talk with communities and set up, you know, good communications. Anyway.
You know, in all fairness, I worked in industry for more than 25 years, and there are good people that have very nasty chemicals on site. And one of the things I insisted on being in the semiconductor industry, I mean, I had all of the local fire departments coming through for classes themselves. I had the workers' compensation people come through. I had the local physicians come through. And part of that community engagement was to be able to get them to understand all of the different engineering controls that we had within that company to make sure that our neighbors were safe as well as our own workers. And I think it's equally important to that. It's one of the reasons why I like engaging the occupational health nurses, since they do great things, and they make a huge difference, not only in the workers' lives, but the families and the community overall.
Any other questions? Well, I thank you all for coming. Let's give the panel a great conference.